You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. First of all, I want to thank Stephen Foley for coming on. I love that part. I love that story, man. I absolutely love it. Sitting at home, on disability, and he's looking at pictures, and he looks, and he says, "What?" In fact, during the interview, as it was playing, I was looking at pictures, and the picture for me that's in the Omaha World Herald that I looked at and went, oh my God, that's not John Bradley. I just saw. And it's a picture of the first flag raising. Okay? And so these guys are standing on the crest of Mount Suribachi. And when I saw this, I was like, whoa. Okay. So you see pictures of John Bradley. And then, and you see the picture of supposedly Bradley in his uniform atop Mount Suribachi, right? But the picture for me that is amazing, that like that's not him, is a picture that shot. And it's crazy because they're standing up on the military crest. Well, actually, on the topographical crest of Mount Suribachi. They're like standing on top of it. Yeah, like right up in front of God and everybody. And they did a great job with the pictures in the Omaha World Herald, as I said. But anyway, they've got a piece of pipe, and there's, I think that's Sergeant Thomas there. But anyway, Bradley's in the middle of the picture, and he's looking down at whatever, I think that's Chuck Lindbergh, because Lindbergh was wearing his coat over, I don't know what kind of, they had like a kind of a field jacket, but wasn't the field jacket that we know it. It's just kind of a short-waisted kind of, you know, it might have gone to mid-hip. Not, I mean, like your hip bone, your hip socket, like, so it didn't go very low on you. Anyway, looks like Lindbergh is stomping something. I'm looking at it, and then Bradley's standing with his back to you, and his uniform is different. Okay, he still has his leggings on. And you see it in, when I first saw it, that's when I went, oh my God, it isn't him. And it takes all of like a second when you look at his uniform. Because what they would have you believe, the way the picture is somehow he took off all of his stuff and he put on a pair of wire cutters on his hip and he participated in the flag raising, the second flag raising. And you're like, okay, look, he didn't unblouse his pants. He didn't take off his leggings. Somebody made a mistake. Okay. Somebody has made a mistake. And so, so it's just, I just saw that picture. So anyway, I want to thank Stephen Foley for coming on. The things that are most identifiable in the picture and the way ultimately they resolve the case is this, there's a strap hanging off, but there's other of the guy who's in the picture. You can see the strap in the picture. Okay. You can also see, right, the guy with wire cutters that doesn't have a canteen in his canteen pouch, and his pants are unbloused. And you can see that's the guy, that same guy, right, wearing a soft cover underneath his helmet. It doesn't look anything like John Bradley. And it takes about no time to go ahead and and see all the different things that they identified, right, in this guy. There's two ways on an M1 Garand. There's two ways that you can connect the sling on the upper part of the rifle near the muzzle. You can connect it to what's called the stacking swivel, which is it's like an open clip that they use to stack rifles. Okay, but that's not the sling swivel. Okay, that's the stacking swivel. The sling swivel is further down the rifle. He's got his rifle slung in through the stacking swivel, which is unique on the mountain that day. So they identify, and then that strap hanging off his helmet liner. Now the old, for those of you who aren't familiar, the old steel pot. There's two elements to it. There was the steel helmet, the one you see in World War II, the one you see in Vietnam and Korea. There's two elements to it. There was a helmet, the metal part of it. And inside of the helmet was what was called a helmet liner. And it was made of, I don't know, some kind of material, press material. And it had like the webbing that sat against your head, kind of a web thing that went through the helmet. And kept the helmet didn't sit rest on the top of your head, the webbing did, and there was air between your head and the helmet. Would get pretty uncomfortable if the helmet was on your head. And then the chin strap was on the helmet liner, not the helmet. And then a third piece, if you will, was the cover, the fabric cover that Marines wore that went over the top of the helmet. So it's three pieces. A lot of guys took the helmet cover off or the helmet liner out, and they simply wear the helmet with the with their soft cover underneath it. Some guys would wear the helmet with the helmet liner in it and the helmet and their soft cover underneath that. So anyway. But when you looked at the pictures, it doesn't take very long before you look and say, oh my God, they got it wrong. So anyway, my thanks to Stephen Foley for coming on, and again for the contribution he's made and to all of this, very, in my opinion, very interesting stuff. If you like history and you like the Battle of Iwo Jima, or you simply are a fan of the Marine Corps throughout all of this. So anyway, I don't know where the gunner is. He's supposed to, he confirmed a little bit ago, but he's in a status of unauthorized absence. So, tell you what, why don't we bother him? We'll just call him, find out where he is. Stand by. I got some good news yesterday, which is pretty nice. Hold on. Let's see what he's doing. Earth to Muslimin. Earth to Muslimin.
You've reached Mike Musselman.
Oh, there you have it. I'm not sure where he is this morning. The here's an email. Mac, it's interesting to listen to you guys talk about Iwo Jima. I've never delved into the battle that deeply. Could you give some resources? Well, I think, what resources would I give? Here's what I would do. I would, were I you, and you're interested, I think you need to read a bit of an overview first. And so you kind of get a little sense of, you know, where the whole thing went. I think that's important. And so I would tell you, if you're a member of the Gazette, I think the coolest things to read are the articles that were published in the aftermath of the Gazette. And let me log on to the Gazette, and I'll give you a few of them. So to me, that's I like those accounts, right? You can read the view from 10,000 feet in the major histories that get written. But I think that if you want to start and you want to kind of wet your whistle, I always like to read more personal things. And so let me see if I can find. I'm logging in right now to my account. Log in. I did. President of the United States getting ready to depart for Vietnam. Good luck to him. Don't screw it up. Yeah, like you did the whole Syria thing. Goof. All right. Search past issues. That's what I want to do. Not sure why we're taking forever to load, but must be Gazette thing. And then the other thing I do is I look at pictures. This is brutal, man. I don't want the maneuver warfare collection. There you go. Search. Iwo Jima. Just type in Iwo Jima. So cast a wide net, right? There's 38 pages of articles here about Iwo Jima. And so I just go through those and look for the articles that were written right after the war. I'm just trying to think. Yeah, here's one. A Sulfurous Hell. From the Volcano to the Gorge. This is a book, though. So you go through the Gazette archives. And the archives of Leatherneck, too. And you're looking for first-person accounts of the battle. I think that's the most interesting. And then I think you follow those, right? I think it's important that you get a good map. get a good map. And so if you get a good map, you can follow the battle throughout. I think that's important to have a visual idea of. Otherwise, people start saying things, units and stuff like that, and then it's easy to get lost. So I think that's important too. And I tend to put these things in PowerPoint. Yeah, I'm kind of a goofball about it. You put them in PowerPoint, and then you can annotate things. Somebody's just admonishing for allowing Gunnar's voicemail to play over the radio. Oh well, I'll edit it out. If they didn't write it down, they'll never hear it. That's right. The power of the media. Yeah, so I would put that stuff in a PowerPoint, and then you can make notes on it, right? So they land the 4th Division on the right, the 5th Division on the left, the 28th Marine Regiment goes up to Mount Suribachi. Everybody else kind of moves and hangs a right up the island and heads up the island. After a few days, the 3rd Marine Division gets inserted between the 5th Division and the 4th Division. So from left to right across the island, right? And this is as they're facing north now, not as they initially landed, but everybody turns to the right and faces north. So you got the 5th on the left, you got the 3rd Marine Division in the center, and you got the 4th Marine Division on the right. And so that's the general scheme of maneuver how it happens as they go up the island. So once you have that kind of in your head, the rest is just begin to read. I look at pictures, and I love to look at the equipment they wore, the way they jury-rigged stuff, the improvisation that they did, you know, all kinds of stuff that they screwed with everything on their vehicles, man, everything. They ripped them apart. They put them back together. They did all kinds of stuff that we would never do today. So that's how, and then pursue the things that interest you. But then, like I said, if you just do a search on images, you can find, whether you're looking for maps, you can find maps that go day by day, so you can see the trace of the battlefield. So all kinds of interesting stuff. Yeah. And so that's how I do it. I wanted to say one more thing about, the prototype for, you know, if you went to war, you didn't talk about it, right? Grandpa didn't talk about it. You know, he fought in World War II, you know, and Uncle Larry, he went to Vietnam. He didn't talk about it. So obviously the correct thing to do, the thing that men do is, right, you don't talk about it. Right? Because nobody talks about it. All right. So let me talk to you about the cheaters. Okay. So there's a great scene in, let me see, and I'll see if I can find it. But at the end of the series Pacific, Eugene Sledge, right, who wrote With the Old Breed on Peleliu and Okinawa, there's a scene in Pacific and let's see if I can find it. And is at the end, his dad asks them to go hunting. And it might be in here. So hold on a second. And he starts crying. So I want to talk to you about guys who cheated and how they cheated. You know what they did? They weren't supposed to talk about it. So you know what they did? They wrote books. William Manchester fights in the Pacific. What does he do? He writes Goodbye Darkness. Because he's not supposed to talk about it. How's he deal with it? He writes a book. Cheats. Okay. Eugene Sledge. How's he cheat it? He writes a book. That's how they did it. They snuck it. They snuck it in there. They talked about it. They found an honorable way to get it out. Now, I want to... Let me see if this is... I think this is a clip from Pacific. He's getting out of the vehicle with his brother, or in the vehicle with his brother, or his friend that was a corporal, right, who fights in the war and then came home before him.
See you later.
Welcome home, Jim.
Now, Sledge is a sergeant, I think. He needs to turn a little bit so I can see his rank on his shoulder. This is not going to have the scene. The scene happens after this. This is him walking up to his front door. His father was a physician. He pauses. He was going to knock, but he just walks in. Play by play here. He's a PFC. Holy shit. Got his blue diamond patch above his, got a grand, his three hole ribbons. Pillinlu and Okinawa. Got three ribbons. Motivator. Got a black leather belt. Uh-oh. And here's his mom. Anyway, so the scene after the scene that I want, that I'm looking for, is his dad wants him to go hunting, and he's going, but he doesn't. But he has some issues with it, and actually he starts crying. I think in the scene he starts crying, and he tells his dad, "I can't do this." So anyway. That's the scene. Because my point in all of it is this, is that Grandpa didn't talk about World War II. Uncle Larry didn't talk about Vietnam, so you're not supposed to talk about it. But these guys cheated. Sledge cheated. He wrote a book about it. So he found an honorable way to get it out there and talk about it. William Manchester in Goodbye Darkness, what does he do? He writes a book about it. So these guys cheated, right? These guys cheated, and they talked about it. So, kind of interesting. Anyway... He's delinquent. Where you been, man? What's going on?
You know, Monday started out perfect. Great cup of coffee. Yeah. Oh, beautiful day out. And then you sent me a text. I said, Roger, 11:10, okay. I came over here. I turned on Skype, and my HP assistant came on. And I'm like, what? And, it's the HP support assistant. I'm here to support you. Well, then get off. I don't need you. That's my support. But no, then it just stayed there. I'm like, what's going on? And it just stayed there. It stayed there. And then I go to click on an app, something like the internet. And, when you click on something, it just kind of blinks. And it's thinking. And there's something going on. So I open the task manager up. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And it's that. So it's a new laptop. It's getting to the point where.
It's a new, new laptop.
Yeah. So HP.
How new?
Like less than a month.
Oh,
but so it's at that point where they want you to subscribe to like all the shit.
Yes.
And so this is where I know they put shit in your computer that irritates the living shit out of you. So you're like, oh, and then they give you a banner. You want your computer to be faster and not have these problems? You're like, yeah, sure. Well, it's self-induced because then what happens is HP has put that bug in there and then they give you the fix for it right about that 30-day mark. And I'm like, you son of a bitches. So now, like, all of a sudden, all my mail's coming in, like, everything's springing up, like, hey, where you been? I'm like, oh, shit. I mean, it was like...
I remember when the first computer I got, I had those issues.
Oh.
Come on, man. Are you kidding me? What, were you born this morning?
I had no control over that. Everything was working fine yesterday.
Clown show. Come on.
Working on my plans.
For the garage still? We're not over?
Well, no. Now I'm doing like the detail plan.
With a detailed plan. What's in the detail? What's in Red Sox Yankees played on Saturday?
They do?
They did.
They did? Oh, yeah. This is X. I don't watch X.
Come on. Baseball's here, man. Get into it.
Not yet. Like I said, I do, but this is too early still, man.
I was just happy to hear, like, it in the air, this conversation. Right?
Yeah, that's nice. You see it on the news. You're like, yeah.
No, I watch the game. It's on TV.
Oh.
Yeah.
I won't watch these yet.
I know. It's not. You won't even talk about it until September.
It's baseball yet. This is just training.
I know, but it made me happy. It made me happy to have it on.
Max got a score sheet there on the sofa.
No. I was actually writing. I'm writing the book about post-traumatic winning that I started writing last summer and then kind of got sidetracked. So I sat down and I clear time every day to sit down and write. And I like having the ball game on when I'm writing. So there you have it. There you have it. Mm. Yeah. So I did that. And then I had anonymous sources, multiple anonymous sources saying, so I go to this thing at Camp Lejeune. And the commandant speaking, right? Mm-hmm. And he mentions you by name one time. He mentions you by name. I'm like, whoa, that's cool. And then he does it a second time during the same remarks. Then he does it a third time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why not fly me out and just let me give the speech then? You know what I'm saying, Mike? Like, look, why don't you like go beyond two footnotes? Like, why don't we just get the source here? Come on.
That's funny because, our mutual friend, the editor-in-chief, I talked to him a week ago. And so he's like, he sent me a text and he said, hey, man, anything you want me to ask the commandant? And so I was like, I don't really care. But then I just came back and I said, yeah, hey, ask him about post-traumatic winning. And he's like, yeah, okay, well. And the reply back was he would not answer that question. Everything else, yeah. And I'm like, really?
Okay. Ooh, there's some stuff going on in the background that I won't talk about. But
yeah, I know.
Right?
There is now, yeah.
Right. But so it's interesting, having heard that late last week, I heard it from multiple people, said, yeah, after the third time, it's like, hey, really, sir? Back away from that, dude. So, interesting. Interesting. As the world turns, we'll keep you posted. What else? Did you do anything exciting over the weekend?
Yeah, the garage plans are in the final details.
Like? What are the final details? I thought you had the detail plan.
No, those are the rough sketches. Now I'm putting on graph paper, scaling it.
Oh.
Like, well, this is the blueprints now. This is like... If I gave this to somebody, they would go, okay, I can make this.
So
rough sketches are like, okay, these are brainstorming ideas still.
So now we put measurements to paper and on engineer paper, and we're going.
Now we're for real, boy and girls. We are for reals.
Really? Is there anything else innovative other than now we're doing math? Is there anything else innovative that's involved in this? Is there anything new?
Other than the automatic HVAC that I got set up.
Yeah, we know about that. What about the big screen?
The HVAC turns on. LED lighting in the recessed cabinets.
Right, we know that. Nothing new. You're telling me nothing new.
Let's see. No, everything else. Airline integrated, air compressor line integrated on the workbenches all the way down the line.
Right.
So I'll have three hookups on the left and three hookups on the right.
Right. All right. All right. So we got we're pneumatic. We're good with air. So
air.
And HVAC. We're good with HVAC. Any other capabilities that we need?
No, not that I can think of. Let's see. Nope. That's it. I'm making a tool rack on the right side for all my drills. And that's going to be like drill exclusive, like all my wood drills, machine, all that stuff is going to be over there. All one place. So like I said, I've already, so wood working in the center, automotive stuff on the left, and then gun shit on the right. That's the way it's set up. So my drawers and my cabinets are all set up to take like all of my gunsmith tools, and that's why I'm putting the air stuff over there. The miter saw is dead center in the middle, recessed 4 inches to allow to be level at the top, so I can use the whole workspace as a cut bench. If I'm cutting a 16-foot beam, of course. But that's it, man. I was thinking about doing soft-closed drawers, but that's a little overboard.
What, doing what? Soft closed drawers? What's that?
Yeah, you know, when you go to push it and then it automatically engages and closes itself.
Yeah, that is a little, well, you know, it depends.
In my kitchen.
It depends on the drawer. You know, some drawers.
My kitchen's got the soft closed doors on the cabinets and the drawers. So when you go to close it, it stops it like that last quarter or a last inch, and then it closes it ever so softly. So gentle.
Really? So all you have to do is just kind of slide it, and then it takes over by itself. Much like we see the technology we see on car doors and things like that.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow. I saw a commercial. I saw something in a commercial that says, let's see, that in the future, like the heads-up display embedded in your windshield will monitor your eyelids.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
And that if it senses your eyelids blinking more than normal, it'll
slam on the brakes real quick, wake your ass up,
and roll the car over.
Oh shit! Or yeah. And it'll yell out at the same time.
Whoop, whoop.
Squirrel, and then squirrel at the top of its lungs and slam on its brakes. Wow, what?
And then it will go ahead and alert the police to come get you. This person is driving impaired. This person is driving impaired. Exactly. Please come yoke their ass up.
The system is called the Benedict Arnold.
Exactly.
You can have it installed in your car. Oh, that's an interesting name. Is there any relation to it? No, that's silly.
Coincidence.
Yeah.
Coincidence.
And it turns your ass in. And it can smell your breath, too. It's got little sensors. So it knows you're intoxicated, and lets you know the officers.
Doesn't the technology already exist that in order for you to unlock the ignition, you have to blow?
Blow it, yeah. But I wonder if they can have it, like, just sense it, like breathing. That'd be cool to have a little personal assistant. You know, that'd be like, you get in the car. Good morning, Michael. Good morning, Benedict Arnold. And you're like, all right, where are we going today, Michael? Oh, we're going to the grocery store, Benedict. Okay. Hey, Michael, did you brush your teeth? I'll be right back. You go back out there.
I'm
sensing. You're like, hey, thanks, Benedict.
I'm sensing you didn't. Also,
yeah.
Would you like your bowels evacuated? Why, yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Benedict.
That is funny. No, but I mean, it's crazy that technology already exists.
Benedict, you laugh now. Benedict is going to be in the future.
Yeah,
there's the Chinese. I was watching a special last night on the Chinese. Did you see that?
No, I didn't. You know what I watched last night? I haven't done this. I've never done it. I watched two episodes of Air Disasters on the
that was scary.
On the Smithsonian Channel. One happened in Dallas, and the guys didn't put down the flaps, and they took off and crashed and killed 14 people. And then the second one, and then how they went about finding out what actually happened was kind of interesting. And then there was a commercial for the next one in that episode, and that was the episode where the Russians shoot down that airliner.
Oh, yeah, the Malaysian Airlines, yeah. MH17.
Yeah, and
the Russians didn't do it, the Ukrainians did.
No, I thought it was the Russian separatists in the Ukraine had their missile and shot.
Yeah, okay, separatists, yeah.
But they don't go into that. They just identify it as a Russian missile.
And it has like a bow tie fragmentation, and they showed the actual bow tie cut cookie cutter right through the canopy. I saw that, too.
Not only through the canopy, and then they – the forensics of it is I thought was pretty interesting.
Pretty neat.
Yeah, I mean, they get these bow tie pieces of fragment out of the body of the pilot. And so – and then they take as
it looks like bow tie pasta.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but they're thick. And so what they do is they're doing this all on circumstantial evidence, right? You know, eliminating all this stuff. Then I don't know how many months later they finally get to go to the Ukraine, to the site, and they measure where this stuff is, and most of it had been moved, and then they put it on a truck, and, you know, they have these guys acting like they're Ukrainian soldiers, and what are you doing with that? Wah, wah, wah. So then they put it on a truck, they bring it back, and somebody brings a piece that they found in another city of the windshield. And so then they take these rods and they stick them through the shrapnel holes in the front left part of the fuselage, and they where these things then it's called a wire diagram, and where they intersect, they estimate where the warhead, the surface-to-air missile detonated like, you know, less than 5 meters from the front left side of the cockpit. And then you see the front, then they assembled what they could assemble, what they brought back, and you see this mosaic that they put together in a hangar, and you're like, wow.
So, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's one of those, you can't, at first they denied it, and they're like, okay, who fired a missile? And it's the SA, I think it's like a SA-11, or there's a special name for it. They had it. I can't remember, but it's like an SA-11. It's on the little bed, the six-wheeled thing. I can't remember the thing. But so the SA-11 missile, so they go there, and they're like, hey, this thing was found by an SA-11 missile. Who was operating one of those? And so that's like being on the ground and like, okay, who fired this 155 round? Wasn't us. You're the only artillery battery out here.
We know that.
Sure now?
We know
positive?
That. We know that, but it wasn't us. We didn't shoot it.
Yeah. And you're like, okay, so let me get this straight. You're telling me you're the only unit in the whole area that's firing this BUK 9K-37 missile system, and you're telling me you didn't do it? Can I count your missiles? Well, sir, you're missing one. Like I said, I don't know. I don't know how. You know, you look over and you go, Igor? Explain to this gentleman how we're missing a missile.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I just got here.
Where's the missile?
Yeah. I don't know. When in doubt?
Igor, you want to go visit your parents in the upper reaches of Siberia? No, sir. My parents aren't there. Oh, I get it now. Okay. Yeah.
No, but I never watched any one of any of those episodes. But I watched them. I watched them last two.
But weren't they told too to stay out of that area? There's a war going on.
No, what happened was there's called NOTAMs or something like that. Notes to Airmen.
Yeah.
And
I hope God Rudy's not calling call and listening, because then we're going to get all the, you know, the aviation side of it.
Then he's going to call. We're going to have to explain what a donkey is and what the difference between a donkey and a mule.
Donkey and a mule. Right. Yep. All right.
But anyway, no TAMs. So what they did was they raised the lowest elevation that aircraft could transit. They had had an aircraft shot down the week before, a military aircraft flying at about 20,000 feet. And so they raised the ceiling to 32,000 feet. This thing was flying at 33,000 feet.
And this missile can go to 85,000 feet?
Yeah, something like that. And then they pulled out a list of all the different flights that that transited the region that day. It was hundreds. It was like 158 overflew that area where there's a conflict going on. Like, look, I'm not a pilot. Maybe what would it cost you 5 minutes to fly a little bit different route? That's not a good idea. I guess until somebody gets shot down. But I mean, why would you overfly Afghanistan? I take that back. Afghanistan really wouldn't be problematic, right? Because
they don't have
there's no
UK-9783 missiles.
Yeah, exactly what he said. And so, so it wouldn't be really an issue there. But back when we were arming the Northern Alliance with Stingers.
Yeah, Stinger still doesn't have that max ceiling.
What's the max ceiling of a Stinger?
Like 20,000, 22?
22 sounds familiar, but I know I won't know it.
It's been a long time. Max ceiling of a Stinger missile. An FIM-92 Stinger will go... it depends on the version. So the brand new, the 92G, has a max ceiling. Of course, they tell you the stories, but they don't tell you how far it goes. I don't know, man.
Stinger missile itself has an outward targeting range of 4,800 meters, 15,700 feet, and can engage low-altitude enemy threats at up to 12,500 feet.
Well, so it's not far.
No, that's not very far. You need a little bit more robust engine than a Stinger can give you to get up. This thing was going like Mach 3.
The BUK-9?
Yeah, that thing. Whatever that thing was. So,
So separatist leaders say that they only have shoulder-fired man pads that couldn't reach the plane.
Yeah, of course not.
Yeah, and then it was like, but what about that SA-11 gadfly? Oh, that's missing the missile.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
We didn't know. We didn't know that.
Yeah. So Blick missiles can reach 14,935 meters. And they were flying at 10,000 meters. So, yeah, you're in the envelope, boys.
Yeah. 290.
And at least it was quick for the pilot.
290-something people on that thing going on vacation, dead.
And it separated. As soon as it hit the cabin separated, you know, right from the main. And then the whole thing just I hope it was quick.
It broke into three pieces. Broken into three pieces. There was one. The way they depicted it after their analysis, it breaks apart just aft of the cockpit, and then just forward of the tail section. falls into three pieces. So, yeah. I mean, come on. What are you shooting at aircraft flying at 32,000 feet for? You want to know why? Because people are stupid. Like, 32? I thought it said 22.
They're just bored, dude. They're bored Russians drinking beer, drinking vodka.
Yeah.
Something hits on the radar, and they're like, hey. And they're like, hey, you know, this argument, the conversation had to be like, it's got to be, you know, a commercial airline. And they're like, hey, man, what the hell? Let's just do it anyway. You know, it's like Marines. When Marines start getting bored, and they have something, they're going to get in trouble. Hey, let's throw Jones off the fantail just because, man. I don't know. You sure? Yeah, he can swim pretty good. What else we got to do? You know, you're right. Let's throw Jones off the fantail. That's where trouble comes, man.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
Bunch of Russians drinking alcohol.
Well, you know, remember when, what was it? Was the USS Vincennes shot down the Iranian airliner in the Persian Gulf?
Wasn't the Vincennes an aircraft carrier?
No.
Oh. But that's different. That was America defending. And I don't remember that story, but I remember things that came out of it, like they had put like the Rush or the Iranians put like a bunch of corpses on them. They were already dead when in the plane or something like that. And you're like, yeah, what?
Yeah, that kind of stupid. No, there was always fear. Let's see, how should I say this? There was always fear that you would be near one of their major air bases, right? And they would take off a military aircraft that wasn't squawking, right? So civilian aircraft all squawk. They identify themselves by airlines and by flight, right? And all this data moves. So that's how when you see those little blips on TV, and they say, oh yeah, that's KLM flight 873 en route to Amsterdam, blah, 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 blah. The aircraft squawks out. Right.
Right.
Military aircraft don't squawk. So, and then there's.
Well, they do.
They can.
But they can, they, yeah.
They can go they can. What's called nose cold, which is beep, everything goes
on. Oh, no.
So, so what happens is there was this always this fear that things coming out of those airports would they take a military aircraft, launch it on a commercial route. And so just so everybody knows, the oceans and the air have lanes in them, right? It's just not like go anywhere you want to go. If you're going to Chicago, you fly in the lane to Chicago from Los Angeles. And there's a line, and that's a highway. So anyway, the fear was it would come out of one of those airfields, and it wouldn't be squawking, but it would just be, you wouldn't have long at all as it took off, climbed, the distance between the coast and where you were very short, it would deviate, come off that, and it would try to smoke you. That was always a Navy fear in the region. So when that happened, and there's various stories about the aircraft that it was not squawking, and so it got shot down, but terrible stuff.
Yeah, but before that, what caused that whole like thing to happen wasn't the Stark a year before, right?
I don't know the chronology, but the Stark got smoked. But the Stark got smoked by the Iraqis.
Yeah, but there's right? Like a lot of tension still though going on.
Oh yeah, no kidding. Who?
Yeah, that was. And then, so all of this was going on in the Straits of Hormuz. And then this plane had launched from Tehran. It was going to Dubai, I think, wasn't it? It was Dubai. It was Dubai. But what really kind of puzzles me is they showed it on the radar leaving Iran and then heading on that. And I don't really remember the whole why they did it, but immediately, man, you're in that CIC, you'd be like, shit.
Yeah, you're the quick and the dead. And so when, yeah, see, this happened in May. We left for the Persian Gulf, or for the Straits of Hormuz, the Northern Arabian Sea, because at the time, when Mike and I are kind of on sea duty at the same time, aircraft carriers did not go into the Persian Gulf because of the silkworm missile threat in the Straits of Hormuz that you could get sunk. So the Stark gets shot by two Iraqi Mirages, their F-1s, and they shoot two missiles and they hit the Stark. So
37 sailors, right?
Yeah, and so on our way over, you know, I mean, it was pretty serious stuff. I mean, we craned on, I can't remember, thousands of sandbags, sandbagged all the sponsons, put 50 cals up there. Marines were out there, which was great for the Marines because when they weren't on post, they'd be outside in the fresh air, which is something that you tended not to do on an aircraft carrier when you're deployed. So it was great for them. And, but it was pretty tense. And then during that time, all of our escorts, every one of them, sailed through the Straits of Hormuz and blew the shit out of a bunch of Iranian, oil platforms because we caught them. This is an awesome story. We caught them laying mines in the Persian Gulf. And we had one of our special helicopters that doesn't make a lot of noise was watching them. And I was in the CIC listening, and they report, you know, we're watching them lay mines, and you're just like, uh-oh. And, you know, they requested permission to engage, and then it was like, stand by, and you're hearing it, and it was just, and they must have had to call back to the Pentagon, to the White House, I don't know who, and you just sat there and waited, and then they came back, permission granted, and then you
see,
heard this.
This Roger. Is another story, though. If you read the Vincent story, this is another one of those. U.S. military, take heed. There's 1,000 stories, most recently, too. It's not like you have to go back 1,000 years. When something goes bad, cop to it. Right. Don't start making up stories.
Right.
Just tell the goddamn truth. Because when they do find out, because they will find out, it happens every single time. You know, and this is one of those, the Vincennes was not in Iranian waters, and this was not this. And then, you know, when Admiral Crow had to go on national TV and say, regarding my earlier statement about the USS Vincennes, not only was it in Iran's territorial waters, it was well in territorial waters
right.
when it launched its missiles. And we did this, and we did that. You know, it's like... But they covered all of that up. They're like, no, we denied any knowledge. You're like, dude, really?
It's
really?
Stupid.
You're going to go there?
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the Army and the Pat Tillman thing, I mean, look, it's one thing for us to get in a room and say, God, it'd be really great if we could do this and we could do this. And then also one of the adults stands up and says, hey, boys and girls, man, no can do. You can't do that because, first of all, we'll never be able to – get everybody to stick to the same story, and then nobody wants to be around for that event, right?
Right.
Yeah, you're right. He's right. Screw it. All right, what do we have to do? Well, we got to tell the truth. Who do we got to get to tell the truth? I don't know.
Truth teller. Get the truth teller out.
Where's Musselman? He's sleeping. Go get him. Tell him we got something for him to read in public. He's a good reader.
Yeah, he's the fall guy.
So, but again, it's true. And you, I don't know, you think you can spin, I don't know why they think they could spin it, because it's always better to tell the truth, take the face shot, and say we made a mistake. But anyway.
Yeah, we shut it down. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, say all the right things, right? Say all the right things. Hey, we apologize.
We compensated. Together, we compensated the U.S. $1 million in a claim that was compensation for the 248 Iranians killed, $300,000 per wage earner victim, $150,000 per non-wage earner. In total, 290 civilians on board were killed, 38 being non-Iranians and 66 being children. It was not disclosed how the remaining $70 million of the settlement was apportioned. Even though the value of the A380 at the time, or the A300 at the time.
Wow. Yeah, and then we had other intelligence that said that they had kamikaze aircraft that would fly out of the actual airport that aircraft flew, and that they were loaded with explosives, and they knew that the ship's air defense system could not engage anything slower than, I think it's 120 knots or something like that, and that they would fly something kamikaze style. So that was out there floating around too. I know because I saw the reports, and we were...
Yeah.
And that's what
we... It says everything right here. A veteran pilot of 7,000 hours left Bandar Abbas
Bandar Abbas. There's two airfields. One's called Bandar Abbas, and the other one's called Chabahar, both on the coast.
Yeah. Bandar Abbas was told by Tower to turn on his transponder. The flight assigned to a really okay. It's a 28-minute flight just across to Dubai. And then a short distance made a simple climb to 14,000 feet and descend into Dubai. The airliner was transmitting the correct transponder squawk of a typical civilian aircraft. And on the morning of July, U.S. Vincennes was transiting Straits of Hormuz and returning from escort duty. A helicopter deployed. There was a show that had this on. It was pretty interesting.
How do they get confused if it's squawking?
I don't remember that. They don't talk about that. Contrary to the accounts of various Vincennes crew members, the cruiser's AGS combat system recorded the airliner was climbing at the time and its radio transmitter squawking on only Mode 3 civilian frequency, not military Mode 2. After receiving no response and multiple radio challenges, and believing the airliner was in an Iranian F-14 Tomcat?
This is how stupid this is, because the profile that you're worried about is not an aircraft that's squawking on a civilian mode and climbing. It's an aircraft that's not squawking and descending that is using a commercial air lane. That's what you're worried about.
This is using the air lane. It's using the squawk. You can walk outside. Look up in the sky. It's at 14,000 feet. Look at it. Hey, Jones, before we fire this missile, take a look outside and tell me if you see an airliner. Yes, sir, that's an airliner. Are you sure? Yeah, it's got four engines leaving a contrail. It's about 14,000 feet. Okay. You sure it's not an F-14 carrying bombs in disguise? That's what they thought, and they fired it.
Here's the thing about that, right? When you transited those lanes, right? I mean, normally when you got that close to those airfields, you know, you went to general quarters. It's like, you know, Mike and I both transited. I don't know if Mike has, but when you transit the Malaccan Straits, there's pirates, all kinds of crazy stuff,
I've
right?
Done that.
Yeah, you go to general quarters. You know, most ships do.
Straits of Hormuz. Red Sea.
It's miserable. You're at general quarters for hours, but that's what you do. And, you know, you have more additional spotters. You have the first team, navigators and helmsmen and all that kind of shit, right? You have the pros there. You don't have the rookies there. So it's just none of the symptoms that you would see, right, are there. So it's terrible, terrible, terrible. All right. What else you got going on today? Anything exciting?
No, finish my detailed plan.
Oh my God. Go back into the cone of silence with the plan cone of silence.
Yeah. My wife, the wife is like, going, uh-oh. You're taking it crazy. You're going like overboard.
I know, but like, that's how she knows you're happy.
I'm making sure that every piece is covered. I'm going through like, I mean, I have, I'm at now 35 pages of plan.
She might be relatively accurate saying you might be going overboard. But let me tell you, if you don't think you're going overboard, then you're not.
No, I don't think. I think I'm right in the lane that I need to be in.
Exactly. Boom.
And so each panel, each piece of wood, each drawer, I'm doing like a detailed plan of what it is. So I've scaled it, you know, my engineering paper. So it's one little box is 1 inch. So it's easy to see, and I can draw this out, and I'm looking at it. It's fine. I got the rough. Well, this is not the rough. Well, it's kind of rough. But it's the whole plan to scale what it's going to look like. I'll send that to you today.
You don't have to. I'll take your word. I'll take your word for it today.
Oh, no, I think you just. I'm going to frame these when I'm done, too. And if you want the plans.
You can pay for them?
You can pay for them. I'll send them to our viewers. If they want the plans on how to build a beautiful garage cabinet set. And so I'm going to spray paint them a lacquer gray, like a darker gray, with black handles. because I don't want to be better than my kitchen in my garage. That's my fear.
Everybody, people coming into your house and look at like, why do you have nicer cabinets? Why do you have nicer cabinets in your garage? And you could hear the answer to that, like, oh, well, Mr. Big Shot, he had to do the garage and he got a little carried away. Which means now, what do we have to do?
Redo the kitchen.
Exactly.
I know.
All right, have a good one.
All right, man, I'll talk to you later.
We need to do a show about that incident, the Vincennes, how that actually happened. Anyway, if you're just tuning in, Stephen Foley joined us today. He's the Irish amateur historian that is the one that really pushed the photographic evidence of the pictures of what went on Mount Sorbaci, to the point where the Marine Corps looked at it and said, you're right. So he joined us, and we talked in addition to the flag raising, what else interested him on Iwo Jima. And he talks about he broke a little news, said that the Marine Corps is actually developing a report, and that will soon be out. He said, well, maybe not soon, but it's supposed to be out in the not-too-distant future, is the word that he used. So you'll hear him. Have a great day on a Monday. All Marine Radio. Oh, a reminder, Lieutenant Colonel Scott Cuomo joins us tomorrow. Second part of his interview about the future of the Marine Corps in terms of roles and mission. So he'll join us tomorrow. Yeah, how about that? On that note, have a great day on a Monday. All Marine Radio, over and out.